give us briefly their comment on this aspect as we go along. It's okay to do so, because we would like to have a degree of comfort with every one of the process that we move. The committee too will have to indicate its view on this amendment. Let's start with the chapter 1, the amendment of section 1 of the Demarcation Act. Is there any problem with this amendment as it states there? Okay. No indication that there's a problem. We'll proceed. Section 2, that is the Demarcation Act. It's about the timing of the when this thing will take effect, as well as informing the Minister of Finance. Those seems to be the relatively uncontroversial clauses. Okay, we go to chapter 2, so there's no comment on chapter 1.
It does say clarity.
Where's that?
Can we maybe adopt an approach? I'm not implying that you are not recommending that. That we first have an understanding as to how the department and the state law advisors comment on everyone led by you, so that that will be the first round. The second round, then politically, we then also you take us through the same process, so that we don't conflate the legal aspects or technical aspects with the political ones in terms of concern.
That they move through the precisely what I have asked.
Okay.
So they're moving through the section. I'm expecting them to do this, exactly what you're saying. Yes. But also, it's not just the department. Maybe that's the point. I think we should all have an opportunity to comment on each one of them. Honorable Domin?
No, I'm just asking about chapter 1. I think only the Natal delegation had problems with how it will kick in, and is there no comment from the department on that issue? If I'm correct, they said if this is applied, it will take another year before it can be implemented. I personally don't have a big problem with that, but it's also a matter for procedure for me. I hope that the department has picked up on all the points that were raised and will give us an answer on that we don't have to raise it ourselves. And then, Chair, just secondly, are we going to take a stand up front that we're not going to entertain any new amendments that is not in the bill? Because we received a number of submissions. While you're looking at this section, please change this also. I'm personally, if I must express myself, will be quite comfortable if we take such an approach that we just note that there were submissions on this, and when we get to the different chapters. But or else, if there is a need for one or two of the parties or the members that they want to introduce some of those, I mean, then we must look at all of them. So I just want some clarification, you know, are we going to do that or not? Because then I can also, you know, stress the one or two that I feel strongly about, you know, but if we have an agreement as a committee that we're not going to entertain the new proposals, I mean, then I'm at ease.
That is good. To go for a comment on the process, because you see, that we should do, Honorable Domin have commented on the process. So do comment on the process as well. Don't wait until we are warm in the middle of the sea. And you come with a process question. Do you have any?
No, I'm comfortable.
Okay, so far. All right. Any other member has a process point? And that will be. I sympathize with you.
Extracting the comment from...
I'm not extracting them.
Well, I would have thought that the procedure you follow is fine. We look at the amendments that are here, and if we have comments to make, then we should be free. And then if in the chapter that we are dealing with, some suggestions, let's be free to do that. If the department has to comment, in order to clarify anything that they believe might not be so clear, then they should also be free.
Okay. I will ask you, let me rule that, Honorable Dorman, I think let's retain it open up. Let's not close any, whether you'd like to come to us. If there are any one or two that you should talk about them. Let's hear you. Let's debate issues. I think my inclination is to tend to be more open than to close any stuff. Obviously, I have an interest in some of the... I did express my view long ago on some of the issues. I feel that it would be unfair, generous to do that. But let's talk, let's proceed. But on chapter one, there doesn't seem to be any. Is there any comments? And by the way, Honorable Dorman, I took someone to task, he was a visitor, about referring to the transfer. I hear you today talking about Natal. What have you got against that province now? you are not getting lazy as you grow old now. No. So I was just, I noted that. Okay, let's proceed. Let's go to chapter 2. Myron, do you want to comment on the story by Kwazulu Natal?
About
the time frame and so on.
Yeah, Kwazulu Natal makes an observation which is exactly what the intention of the clause is. That the effect of the thing will take place. Now, that's exactly what we intend to do here. To kick in, to allow for the taking of the effect of the of a demarcation in the following financial year. That allows for government to do a lot of planning, especially on the fiscal side, and make the proper provision when there's changes in boundaries.
Yeah, I did think that it's really a financial matter rather than any other thing.
Yes.
So that if you do things in year, it becomes a problem. So there must be agreement that it does. Okay, thanks. Let's go to the there. We're going to chapter 2, the section dealing with the financial year. Number 3. Any comment there? It's okay. No submission spoke to that issue.
No.
Okay. Number 3, section 3. No comment. Section 5. Okay, pass that one too. Section, why am I saying this section? Number 6, item number 6 there, section 72 of the Structures Act. Comment, department, this is your central question. That's your story. Yes. Reply to the
Chair, as you know, there were various constitutional issues raised in the comments.
Mm-hmm.
And given the fact that the state law attorneys will require a bit more time to deal with these issues, we are suggesting that that this clause be dropped from the bill.
All right. Okay. On the grounds that you have the state law advisor not had enough time to check whether it will pass constitutionality. Okay? let it stay. Any other comment?
No other comment.
So that is section 6.
Yes.
Yes.
It's withdrawn for now. Yes. That, you see, it's reference to making, wait, just make sure this is what I'm talking about. Obligation. Making the work committee obligatory everywhere. So from a May to a month, that changed the constitutionality of that. That's what's been withdrawn. Okay. Now, section 7. Not section 7, sorry man, I'm correcting myself as I go along. Dwelling here is out of order, it's not assisting me at all today. So, yes then.
Chapter 6, yes. Why should we drop it? What should be the implications? What is that it intended addressing?
It's a change of, you see, the existing section makes provision for the for municipalities and says may have work committees. Okay? So the indications are that the status quo remains may and it's not a must.
Okay, that's all that, is it until such time that the legal people have looked into the constitutionality.
Yes.
Because you know, to separate a need. If there is, my belief is that when there are challenges, and we have echoed them yesterday,
yes.
That whilst in the spirit of the present legislative framework, May was meant to be one way of getting informality that all municipalities
yes.
must make sure that within the context of the relevant sector. The constitution, as well as in terms of community participation, that if those particular municipalities who are not prepared to do it, how do you get them in terms of enforcement? So you say you look into the constitutionality, because I didn't want the person, for the sake of the records of this meeting, to remove a need to make sure that there is consistency. So that the blockage be just the legal must and the may.
In other words, you are saying that the committee accepts the request for the introduction, the withdrawal is on legal grounds, not on political grounds. Now that one we accept. I think that would be my view as well. We take that. I guess it's a cautionary step on the department side in withdrawing this. So that when they do, this is a Section 75 legislation, and it goes to the NCOP as well. This is where we must do it, so that by the 18th it's go there. So by that time we can in fact insist that the department must have, the state law advisors must have granted certainty of one kind or another to get that done. Okay. So that it can be reinstated that side. The next issue is clause 7.
It's fine.
Clause 7 is fine.
Chair, I would if for the time being clause 6, as 6 is withdrawn, then I think that in one there, they want that we leave it as it was, because they still have a choice now. So it must read, if a metro or local council decides to have ward committees, that we don't affect that change. But the B is a new subsection, which we can deliberate, but wouldn't it be then the best thing that actually one isn't necessary anymore.
What do you say, department? Yes,
you know, I'm a little bit disadvantaged because I've not been here before, but in my reading of this particular clause, it looks like to me it is, it makes more sense the way it is, even than before, as proposed,
yeah.
Even than before, because it has, it calls upon the local council or metro to establish a ward committee for each one in the municipality. It can only establish a ward committee if it establishes ward committees. If a local metro or local council establishes ward committees, it must establish a ward committee. So it can only establish these ward committees in each, in the municipality, in each ward. If yes, you have already established it.
In other words, the argument that I hear is, Domen, that it cleans it up, it still remains an option, but it's clean. It doesn't introduce a new element altogether. It doesn't make it an obligation. It still says, if you go ahead this route, you have to turn left. You can't be right wing.
Yes, sir.
These are laid, the inclusion of if does not change anything, because this is the decision they have taken, and as you put it, that there is a, because you see the other thing, Kepesin, how this is going to help, and I must direct my husband to Cape Town, for example. When you have people using different languages for the same thing, which is confusing. That having decided to take this route, as you say, then there must be this work committee that allow for committee. And I raised it even yesterday that, for instance, in the Western Cape Town mission, Cape Town city contradiction that on the other side, when they propose, for instance, an increase to 20 work committee members, on the other side, you say, if you say, I don't want it, why do you want them, the numbers be increased? Which motivated for a more inclusive geographical, without us having agreed to the number, but I'm just saying, as a matter of principle.
Yeah. No, let me defend the DA presentation for a change. You see, the guy said he came to gamble. You see, if you decide to go ahead, then do the following, you must at least make the following. He made a number of stories around what the point you are making, flexibility of size, the policy framework, sectoral representation. Sectoral representation in any case is in the law. It's a requirement of implementation. So that one is superfluous, not so. About the registered voters, that's true. That's what's happening. That's what's supposed to happen. If it happens differently, that's another story. And admin support, that's the next point that I thought we were going to talk about on that one. Under clause B, I think we must talk about clause B. You see, there are two points there. This must be resourced, and my note here suggests that it's by national, provincial as well, not just the municipal thing. So there must be support, general support. The point I want to make about this ward committee is that both the DA presentation, the SAMU presentation, which is the documentation that we received, as well as the KwaZulu-Natal. KwaZulu-Natal, for example, says they often have to pay for catering of ward committee meetings. And so they need a legal basis, a framework for doing that. And this is why Kanya's proposal, which we suggested, might mean that we introduce a D in clause 7. So you have A, B, C, and D. Okay, and D would be support for that formulation that was introduced by Kanya, but we can have an alternative formulation that meets our requirements here. Any takers for that?
Jane, may I just comment on the
previous
one? I will go along that we change in one the wording.
Yes.
So actually, you see, the big problem is always a context. You can't just look at this one. You have to look it in context.
Yes.
And I mean, actually, then I agree that in the context it's very clear. Two sentences above it in the original law that the decision is actually there. So this might be a better wording then, mm-hmm. as that was in the past. So I can go along with it.
Okay.
Thank you for explaining that. I think they argued, often happens in court, please don't find my client guilty. But if you find him guilty, you will not.
Yes. You understood him well. Tell him to me. You hear this?
You must anticipate. Chair, then on the B section that you are now on.
Yes.
I'm suggesting that you include
an extra D.
Yes.
Mm. Which is what the point we're making earlier. This refers to the questions you were raising on the Khanya presentation yesterday. Okay? Now, what I'm suggesting is that in the KwaZulu-Natal presentation, they speak about support toward committees, which is for them, for example, they made reference to often being required to provide catering. Okay? But that's part of the administrative. Here we are referring to, out-of-pocket expenses. So in other words, we are selectively choosing things across a wide range of areas for which what committees need support. So I'm saying that as a committee, we can't really just confine ourselves to only out-of-pocket expenses, leave out catering in quotes, leave out other support that they need. So I'm suggesting that's the only one part, that's the broad administrative support. On the other support, the quality of work, of the reason for the existence of ward committees, which is what we would address. So that's an area around which I'm suggesting. These three submissions, Khanya, DA, and KwaZulu-Natal, speak to broadly that framework of support.
Yeah, this is a non-legal question, but there's one thing I want us to read and understand.
Yes.
Prior, so that we can then safely arrive at D.
Yes.
So if you read 5A,
yeah.
It says a metro or local council may make arrangements for the payment of out-of-pocket expenses, blah, blah, blah. But C then says out-of-pocket expenses referred to in paragraph A must be paid from the budget of the municipality.
Yes.
Now, you see, a budget, from the moment it is adopted, it becomes law. Am I right?
Yep.
Yes. It is supposed, in terms of the Municipal Systems Act, to reflect the IDP priorities and whatever.
Yeah.
But from the adoption, it becomes a legal document.
Yes.
Now, I would think there should be a better way of having A in my reading, that because if you say a metro or local government may make arrangements for the payment, whilst it says it must be budgeted for, why don't we just have a metro and a local council should budget for this, for the auto, as contained there. Legal people, I have a problem with the two. The other one is like, not so as to, because if you make arrangements, it's too verbose, or I don't know. Because C is very strong, and C is then paving the way exactly for the D to come to company.
Myra, what's your comment on that one?
The first one, 5A, when we say make arrangements, is looking at the processes that the municipality must set up, and the policy that it must set up in order to pay off the thing, because that's important. If there is no process, for instance, it must say, state clearly, like for instance, I will pay if you submit certain types of, certain receipts or
in the case where, for instance, a person does not have a receipt but use the taxi to get to the ward meeting, how are you going to deal with that? Who will sign off and all? So those are the kinds of arrangements that we are talking about and how it will be paid out. The other one is just saying, well, how do you fund this? And it's saying it must come from the budget. That's the difference between the two.
Sorry,
Chief,
before you do that, what would be the difference between saying must be budgeted for? I'm asking, I don't know. Okay. Second to you are setting up and then go to
I understand what they're saying. You see, Chapter says, and with our experience in this community, mostly when you're dealing, if you first have to arrive at certainty, at a position that local government had a problem, for instance, with maintenance that was not budgeted for. I'm using that as an example because we did not. I would be happier if C, for instance, would be A. Then A to explain then, because this like what must happen that we have got to budget for it. But they help us without losing it. That C be restructured to be reflective of to be A. Then the other one then explains. But if you start with the other one, it's more, you know, like very loose.
Let's come back to this plot. Let's deal with that proposal. Sorry, that's okay.
Yes, I would agree that I would have thought somewhere there would be provision for a budget for expenses related to the work of what committees. Looks like from what I hear, there is such a provision. In light of that, therefore, I would agree with that institute that this clause should be rearranged so that we first make provision for a budget to be prepared for expenses related to the work of the ward committee. Then if we have to go, Chair, if I may go further, to go to the extent of stipulating some of the expenses that relate to the work of the ward committee, particularly the question of out-of-pocket expenses, I wouldn't say the local council may, it must of necessity make sure that the out-of-pocket expenses must be paid. As different to other expenses that were not necessarily incurred personally by the White Committee members.
Yes. You see, this language, I said so yesterday, we have to tread gingerly because of being here to encroach in a manner that is unacceptable to local government exclusive responsibilities. Even when we legislate, we must do so in a way that includes an appreciation of that distinction. When you say must, you have a force at it. I'm not going to look for I accept then that it can't be taken for granted, which I've answered the language. So the point I'm making is that the language we use in the legislation can't be one that forces the local government to do things. The language must be such that unless this is the way in which we articulate it must be sensitive to that. The differences of the spheres and so on. So, must in that context, which sounds to me to be heavy.
You are differentiating here between general expenses related to the work, right?
Yes.
Personal But when it comes to out-of-pocket expenses,
yes,
there must no doubt, there must no credit.
Yes.
If people are required to board taxis or buses to go to do the work of the wife,
a metro or a local council must determine the criteria for calculation of the out-of-pocket expenses referred to in paragraph A. Doesn't that meet your requirement? Well, it speaks about...
I was looking at A and B and C. Now I see it looks like it does.
Before we move on, I would just like to add, in the bill already, in 4 that precedes this, that we want to change, there is a provision that the council may make administrative arrangements. Now, they do it at the moment, that costs money, they budget for it. The only thing that we're doing now is to give them the right to pay specific to members of the committees. For the ward committees as such, there are budgets. And I would argue very strongly that we leave it as may, because a smaller council may decide that they arrange their own taxes, they arrange their own, that they make sure that there are no out-of-pocket expenses for members of a ward committee. And then it's their option. Let's leave it to them to decide what they do. But we give them now a right that they may pay out-of-pocket expenses, which was never there in the past. And then I would also argue that we don't add a D. If we take the wording of Tanya, I have serious problems with their wording for a D. I don't know if that is the exact D that we're proposing. But I mean to say that, you know, municipalities must make at least 2% of the municipal budget available to ward committees and all sorts of linkages to the IDP and so on. It's a very dangerous. So I would argue let's stick to what the department give us here. I personally also feel that leave it to councils. Let councils have the option to decide how they want to arrange their things. But in principle, we just give them that right to pay out the pocket expenses.
You see, hey, it's good that, and I am just raising this, we, honorable members, I mean, we were part of, you see, in the year 200 in 2003, the committee went throughout the country, covered the whole country, and we have a very authentic report that was distributed, that has served as evidence in terms of the challenges that we face, not only in urban, the frustrations, and I'm making this reference to that report, that even in our debate in Parliament, we were in agreement that ward committees are facing challenges. And then you remember that in an area like in the rural, where geographically these people are very disadvantaged, that, I mean, even now, we were in Flagstaff, we were in Bizana. You could see, you could be convinced without even questioning that as to how difficult it will be to move from one area to the other, if you have to put yourself. I'm just saying, we have to be sensitive. Whilst we read into this jargon, practically, that need cannot be questioned. And the other one is that the very municipalities during our public hearing have been raising this issue. This is one issue that even parties were agreeing on it. Now, you see, the challenge that we should have, I don't think it should be with this act, but it should be when we look deeper, for instance, into the FFC recommend on the equitable share, as to how do we make up for that. And I always make reference to issues that were left on the discretion of municipalities, that both provincial and national local government has got a duty to make sure that such provisions are implemented. I would urge really members to reconsider any intransigence in terms of this area, because this is what we have been waiting for when it comes to work committee. As to whether we have been failing in terms of capacity, municipalities have been having another issue that we are going to face with, I'm just flagging it. The issue, for instance, of amendment of bylaws, because of the legal procedures that has got cost implications, have not amended the bylaws because there's this legal expensive rule. But I'm saying, I think we need to engage further on this issue. If we let it go, really, we'll be very insensitive, because we are this committee that did report to the country. That report was circulated to all municipalities in this country. And with our resolutions in the year 2003, where we agreed that there must be these amendments. These were our recommendations, shall we say.
Chair, there's just one thing that I forgot. I also feel strongly that it must be from the budget of the municipalities. You see, some of the people that came to us said, if you force it on all municipalities, then there must also be financial assistance from provincial or national. Now, this is withdrawn. It is still with the municipalities. And so that argument perhaps falls away, but on the other hand, they would still argue and say, you want the board committees to do more, you want out-of-pocket expenses be paid, so there must be assistance from provinces or national. I'm dead against it. I mean, when we bail out municipalities, it's a principle that has been adopted that municipalities must take responsibility for their budget, so they must do their planning, and they must organize a whole ward committees in such a way that they can do it from the budget. There must rather be overall help to municipalities, which they are, than just specific for this. I just wanted to add that.
I think it's important that municipalities internalize this cost in their budget, rather than make the functioning of ward committees dependent on whether or not the grant is going to come or not. Because if something happens where the grant may not be available in 1 year, you know, some crisis happens, then people will say, the municipalities might say to the ward committees, no, we can't pay you. But it must be internalized and be part of the budget. Obviously, municipalities receive equitable share. And equitable share is for generally the operation and maintenance of the municipality as a whole, which includes operation and maintenance of its structures and so forth. And democratic ward committees relate to the issue of deepening democracy and so forth. So I think there's no problem with that. I think the suggestion about changing the order, I think, yeah, we can look at changing the order, you know, put the issue of the budget first in A and then follow with the B's and C's.
What is the current
They are agreeable to say C being A and then A is the other way around. My logic capacity is that
You first have this requirement. The how part comes out of what has been confirmed in terms of there must be budgeted for which is covered. My worry was, and I think we are agreeable to that. But the other thing that I just would propose.
Let's agree what is going on about this. Because you see, when you say that he must be A, you got in A payment of out of pocket expenses, just as you have in C. Which part do you want to set up?
One, the budget.
Okay.
There must be a budget. Then other things will follow our tradition.
Would it be then, let's think about it this way. You see that the Metro and local council may budget for the payment of out-of-pocket expenses to members of the group. That's how it would be. Just on the book, making the recommendation for some of would then see the necessary at all? If you said that.
If we take C and we change it and just say a metro and local council may budget for out of pocket expenses, we're using may there, and the difference between the existing one is just must be paid from the budget.
The challenge we have is that the policy decisions may be sound, but now we don't have legal advice at the moment because this is a drafting thing, and sometimes if we change things from policy decision, they come with strong arguments as to how legal it needs to be drafted. So I would propose that perhaps if we can just keep it in abeyance, when these guys come back, then they can, because none of us here in the department are lawyers, and it's them who translate to the thing, they are legal. Things about what we take into account, so we may end up wasting your time because it's more about legal drafting. We are not changing the policy fundamentally.
Yes. Yes.
Because you are making the same mistake as before, when you said these shall not be paid. Actually, you are coming to the same track where we are saying, when you say, must be paid from the budget of the municipality in question. I agree that we need to flag it, and also on our side, that it is very important. Because there's also a view that some of the municipalities, you know, are having serious concerns because of their tax fees and the budget that they produce. So we have to look at this very carefully. In fact, from where I see, I would see this as more of a pilot project. in the sense that SAMO needs to support effectively the work committee. And that support should not only entirely be on the shoulder of the municipality. I think the work committee serves the interest of three spheres of government. The presidency consistently saying that we must effectively make use of the work committee. Now, to really be the burden on the shoulders of the municipality, somehow, you know, it does not really affect the emotions and the intention of what you want to get out of the work committee. So I have respect the good athletic and when the legal group come, we really negotiate it in such a way that it's not interesting to the party. Except to make it present to the society that they can do it.
Yeah, thank you, sir. As I agree with the suggestion that let's flag this, but I would want to say that we shouldn't just talk about out of court expenses. As you indicated, there are other things that have to be paid for in relation to the work of what committee. So therefore, we should find a way that is going to capture, of course, out-of-pocket expenses as well as other expenses that are relating to this. And on this question of who should bear this burden, should it just be the municipality or all spheres of government? I would have thought that the division of revenue processes are supposed to take into account those contingencies, because the work committees would not only be dealing with matters pertaining to local government work, they would deal with matters relating to other departments of state as they go about doing their work. How, which departments then of state do we choose to call upon to make a contribution to the expenses? I thought that when the budget is divided between the three spheres, these things are taken into account. We don't really want to. It should be a burden and a responsibility of the municipality. But the municipality itself must make sure when it prepares the budget that there will be things that relate to other state departments. It might be difficult to say department of trade and industry must contribute so much, the other department must contribute so much to the work of the ward committee.
Gentlemen, the principle is that we agree that the councils, as articulated here, as will be finalized in formulation. I don't think we should quibble about formulation, but speak about the principle that we want the council to pay this money, and that's the most important part. It must come from its budget. How it is formulated, we will finalize that later. Is that okay? Because I think, in essence, what Gosio Remisa is saying is correct. It will come from, it will be taken in account in the transfers. Is that
it? It's okay, Chairperson. The draft was just for record to say, as a committee, that also we should have a meeting outside this process with Treasury and FSC, because I feel very strong to address the other issue in terms of how to deal with the financial assets. But I feel very strong that it is, of course, it's correct that I agree with you as a matter of principle that this has to happen and it has to be internalized as it was put forward.
Okay, let's go to the next section. Yes.
If we want to bring in budget here specifically, the previous section in the law only refers to make it an administrative arrangement, then we must actually bring in budget there also by saying must make it administrative arrangement and budget to enable ward committees to perform their duty. I'm just cautioning
consistent. What the
if we want to change, yeah.
The principle is that we are not.
And so,
okay,
so I think we must.
No, that's okay. I think that it's an important principle. Let's be consistent across the board. The essential thing is that this money must come from the budget of municipalities.
Mm-hmm.
That you made arrangements, it must come from your budget. Don't think you're going to go to Anglo-American to finance or Department of Trade and Industry.
See, the principal problem that I have, we don't tell municipalities, you must budget for the IDP, you must budget for this and for that. That's part of their budget. We establish the principle here that out-of-pocket money can now be paid. And all we say, leave the criteria to the municipality, and one caution, remember it comes from your budget. That is the way we go about it. So I don't understand why we want to bring in the budget specific only for ward committees, because I mean they must budget for it. They must budget for the administrative arrangement and everything. And I think we must just be consistent with, you know, as I say, with the IDP led programs. We never say in legislation to all the programs, you must budget for this.
Let me draw your attention to the submission by KwaZulu-Natal that speaks about the necessity for a legislative forum that includes local government, provincial government, and civil society. That, in their opinion, it doesn't exist, and therefore makes it difficult. And this is because of the legislation, the nature of conflicting legislation. That, on the one hand, speaks about advancing, encouraging public participation and so on, and all the other makes it difficult for them to come together to work things collectively and so on. So in similar manner, this caution is important that it has not been said before elsewhere. What committees themselves are not committees of council, alright? So they are external to the council. So when you speak about where they are going to get the money from, you can't leave it open. If you leave it open, it doesn't exist, it doesn't happen. This is why I felt that the suggestion that there should be explicit reference that these resources must come from within the council. Now, obviously, what the implication of what Honorable Mushulu is saying is that in the negotiations, in the resource flow, as happens every year with Treasury, that is consideration that must be looked at. When you look at the financial implications of the law, I was looking at the implications of the legislation. What is the financial implication? It will have financial implications for municipalities. And therefore, the Treasury, in its consideration of intergovernmental fiscal flow, has to take on board that there is these resources. That's why I thought we are always asked to look at this. What are the financial implications of this law? So one of them is explicitly because it's referred to them. But council needs to know that it has to come from inside its budget. Members, I think we are taking too much time on this.
The other thing we forget is that, you see, in the funding protocols of local government, there always are grants in terms of institutional arrangements. I'm just saying, the structure, the work committees are a structure with, from the institutional budget, can be catered for internally.
Okay. Alright. That is good.
Okay. No, thank you. Yeah, I think the intention of this section is to deal with the functionality of ward committees. We are trying to devise a mechanism which would assist towards ward committees to become functional. So I think we must look broad into what are the causes of some of these ward committees not to become functional. We are here referring to out-of-pocket expenses. I don't think it is the only issue at hand when you look into why these ward committees sometimes they become dysfunctional. I thought we would also, not knowing what is actually the standing policy on the issue of the expenses here on ward committees, I would then be saying, if it does not conflict with the policy. We need to be discussing the issue of prescriptions, not allowances, not salaries. Because if we talk about out-of-pocket expenses, maybe I'll be saying it is transport, maybe a person could say, on my way to my work, I have to buy a chassis. So here is the receipt for the chassis, you know, expenses of that nature. But in essence, we are saying this person is a leader on his own or her own level, whereby he or she is being expected to the appearance, his or her appearance should be okay. So are we saying out-of-pocket expenses, if this person could say, I bought soap to wash my clothes in order that I should look nice when I attend a council meeting, will it be qualified to be an out-of-pocket expenses? So I was then saying, because we do not want to see ourselves saying, this person went for a hairdo, he went for this, then we say maybe. Maybe then the question of the stipends, because we do not want to be bothered by, you know, I went to go and get this in order that, because of the type of the meeting which I attended, I had to be in this particular way. So, but if it does not contribute to the policy, can't we look into, you know, applying our mind on the issue of the stipend? Thank you very much.
Honourable members, I want to plead with you that we are taking too long on this question. I think that, and the reason is that we are concerned about the policy for support for ward committees. We have expressed our concerns that what is isolated here for explicit referencing is limited. We have said that there's other support that ward committees deserve that is not referred to here. Okay? And the department is not saying to us what the story is all about. It. This is why there is this ongoing debate to and fro about this loss. And I'm pleading with you. Let us for now. I have a view, but I'm not going to pursue it. That we express the view that we should have a D that reformulates the Kanya submission, which is supported by three other people about support to ward committees, about the substantial work that ward committees do. So that's the one concern that I have, that we're not in very specific terms dealing with it, and we don't have a formulation now. I'm going to suggest that we pick up our pace a little bit. I'm going to suggest that we come back to this thing. We suggest that we suspend our quibbling about it, if I may use that word with respect. Let's move on to clause 8. We'll come back to that one to finalize our review. Any comments on clause 8? It's a number issue. No, you must be explicit. It's a numbering issue, eh? That what the problem is. 39, 32, section 259. You see, often you bureaucrats call things technical when they are deeply political. We do want to see exactly what is technical about it. So it's a number issue, okay? No comment about it? Yes, okay. Clause 9?
Clause 9.
Another clause 8, Chair.
Yeah, what about clause 8? You see, when the law was changed, a mistake was made by 32, and we must just not make another mistake now. If I look at 59 of the Systems Act, it's about delegations. And this is about ward committees.
No. It has such duties and powers. Amend the substitution of paragraph B of the following. Yeah?
Yeah, you see?
May delegate to it in terms of section.
Section 74. In this Municipal Structures Act, the heading is Functions and Powers of Ward Committees. and 74B come then with a reference that such duties and powers as the metro or local council may delegate to it in terms of section 32. And 32 is the wrong number. 59 is about delegation. My question is just, 59 is about a municipal council delegating its powers and duties. And if that is applicable to a ward committee, you see, then we go into the area of it becomes a committee of the council. So I would just like the legal people just to look at this. And then we get back to that legal argument that the council may not, or we can't force a council to delegate its powers and so on. Or have I already?
You see, Honorable Domain, this is if they are to do it, they would do it according to this section. They are not saying go and do it. That's what you must understand. It does not say go and do the following things, because it would be taking chances if we were to do that. All that has been said here is that if you are to do it, this is the section that you must follow, which obviously says, for example, you can't do that. You can't delegate the budget, the IDP, those two other stuff. Okay? You can't do that. That's what that section that has been referred to. The other stuff, you have a choice to make. Parts of public participation will allow the ward committee to handle that thing and so on. And delegation is also not, what is the word? It's not permanent. You can always retract your delegation. So there is caution in the manner in which it is ready. That's what I feel about it. My worry about what you're saying is if you are saying even this new section may not be accurate, the 59. Yeah. In that case, that would be a problem. Are you giving us comfort that it is accurate this time? Jason, good milligate, Maron. Who come? Where are your legal team? Where's your legal team?
They've gone out trying to do some drafting.
But they can't take so long, man.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's wrong. Please go and tell them to come back here into the meeting. Otherwise, they are rendering us this dangerous terrain.
Yeah, Chair, I'd like to just subject.
Look, the point is this. Just confirm that this is the correct one, okay?
Mm.
Just confirm that this is the correct one. That's the only point that I think is valid to worry about, Domin, if we agree, right?
Mm.
Yes, because that's the... his initial proper comment is we shouldn't make another mistake. Mm. So that's if that number is... But the principle of saying that if you do it, this is the section you follow, is the correct one.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Let's move to the next section. That's clause 9. Okay, now what we are saying here is, what is this now to coincide for this sounds like sequencing.
The change is consequential amendments that flow from the amendments and the demarcation.
Oh yes.
Yeah,
that's why I'm saying when what becomes applicable at what time. Yeah.
Yeah,
okay. This one is okay. You can live with that one. No politics is, no politics are in danger there. Clause 10?
Clause 10 similarly.
Elected, okay, paragraph adjustment, division of functions. Yes, okay. Chapter 3 now, we're going to the Systems Act. The clause 11 there, the deputy executive mayor, this was oversight in the original definition. That looks like okay. Clause 12, we had presentations here from Ekangala District. and as well as from, I think, KwaZulu-Natal also expressed a fear there. And who else? Yes. The concern that I hear people say are that this is not freezing the municipal contracts of municipal managers into an unrenewable 5-year contract. And that this is not what this law is saying. The department will ask. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's not saying
that. Okay. That indeed this is the changes here, the significant changes that the intention is to let the contract of managers to coincide with the term of office of the municipality, with a provision for an 1-year overlap into the new system for purpose of continuity. That in the performance contract performance management, the provision there for renewal is needed if need be.
Yes.
The committee appreciates that. Can we live with that and go ahead? Members, I'm asking you. Okay. All right. We go ahead with that understanding that this is not necessarily saying that this is one term and completely unrenewable. That's not the story. Okay. We are going to clause 13 now. Yeah, this one is looks like it been done in compliance with the MFMA.
Yes.
Okay. This is okay. Yes.
This clause reads, council may only delegate to the municipal manager of the municipality. For what other municipality would it be? Municipal manager is the municipal manager of the
municipality. Sorry? The council may only delegate to the municipal manager of the municipality the power to make decisions.
The municipal manager is the manager of the municipality. So why we say municipal manager of the municipality? Because it's appointed by the delegated by the council of the municipality, the municipal manager.
Yeah, okay. Potential tautology there. And then the lawyer convinces us that this is how they speak, and therefore this is okay. Otherwise, it sounds clumsy in the view of the committee. If you can clean it up, do so. But otherwise, look, we can live with it if you insist. You have to say a municipal manager, the chairperson of the committee. The municipal manager of a municipality. No, no, no. We will proceed. We won't waste time on this one. It's an important observation. Look at it and come back to us. If you think it can be cleaned up, do so. If you think we must live with it, persuade us, and then we proceed. Any other comment on that?
Yes, it implies that the municipal manager of the municipal concern, municipality concern.
What is the
What you say that them should do?
No, I understand what it is.
Yeah, it's an assumption. Yes, yeah, it's an assumption.
Zulu cannot be delegated across to another municipality, but within my municipality.
Yes.
Whereas the word municipal manager is the general term.
Members, let's leave that one out. Let's not debate it. Let's leave it. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Clause 14, participation of staff members in an election. Now, there is a concern here that you are not fair in the submissions by Zamu and Imatu, that you may be unfair on the staff and so on. What's your argument, Peter?
Chairperson, we are weighing up two types of interests here. Yeah? One, the interests of the citizens or the staff members, as well as the public interest vis-a-vis good governance within the municipality.
Peter, in my meeting, when you use the word good governance, I will not allow you to get away without explicitly saying what you mean by good governance. So please, don't take it for granted we understand what you mean. Just tell us in explicit terms what for you constitutes good governance in this respect.
If we have a staff member who participates in an election, he would obviously have to apply and get a receipt as a candidate. When he does so, he has to also canvass for votes in the constituency. But at the same time, he remains a member of the municipality. There definitely would be instances where he would have access to certain kinds of information which might be of use, that he might use in his canvassing, and which would also disadvantage a candidate who may not have access to that kind of information. And this makes for problems in governance. And it also makes for problems in trying to make the election processes at the local level clean, neat, and tidy. The second issue is that if he has to do canvassing, he would require to take off from work. Now, my understanding is about 1.5 months or 2 months where you do actual canvassing. Now, if the staff member is a senior member, like a municipal manager or a Section 57 manager, he has a performance contract with the municipality and he has to deliver on those targets. And usually elections take place, you know, March, April, May. And that's
the time
where you're beginning to prepare a lot of reports, financial reports. You're trying to conclude on your performance targets and so forth for the municipality, because in July all that material is needed. Now, if 1.5 months are then set aside very close to the year end, that means that senior official will have to set aside or will not be able to perform his duties for that period. And that makes for problems in governance, because part of governance is to perform on your performance contract and meet all your targets and so forth. Thirdly, there is no provisions at the moment in general basic conditions of employment for staff members to go on electioneering. And there's also a serious sort of implications around that. You know, like for instance, you know, do they get paid full time? What if they incur costs? You know, what happens in that case? And so forth. So there's a whole issues of procedures and things that have to be looked at. And fourthly, then there is also the magnitude of the issue from a governance point of view. Because theoretically what this, you know, if one says that a staff member has a right to canvass, which is the case, theoretically the implications are that we could have in 283 municipalities at a very low estimate, at a very, very conservative estimate, about 283 members of managers in those municipalities participating in the election. Theoretically this is possible. It may not happen, but it is possible. And so you're going to have senior members of management participating in this election, and then it affects the performance and so forth. And there is no, at the moment, you know, one is not clear how the municipality will handle continuation of service delivery should a senior official or staff member takes certain leave or vacation to canvass.
Chair, I'd like to suggest that... Oh, we're running. Chair, I thought I was known, but I'll introduce myself. Veronica Makoko from DPLG. I'd like to suggest that this issue also be left aside for legal discussion as well, because while the thrust of the proposal is around ensuring that arrangements in the municipalities are sound at the time of an election, ensuring that there's continuity of service delivery. That's the one interest. But there's another interest, which is around the Bill of Rights and around the rights of people to participate in elections. Now, obviously, we have to compare these two rights.
You know, although our legal advisors tell us that the right to participate in elections can be limited to a certain extent, we need to arrive at a point where we're comfortable that we may actually limit these rights and that we're not violating the Constitution. So I think we need to leave it.
You see, you have a very short time to consult on these things.
Yeah.
This thing must be finished today. So there's no overnight sleeping over legal text fraud. So that's the only right idea. Okay. Any other comments that members would like to make? Yes, Madam.
So, Jefferson, it's true that consultation should be done. You see, Chairperson, I sit in another committee that is private members legislative proposals and petitions. There's a bill for that committee that had to do with the right of the issue of communication that on the eve of elections. What is it that should be put in place that restricts somebody in a given office, and it was like preparing, say, to ministers or MECs, that within 24 hours, let me use that as an example, to then popularize a particular project under the guise of government to the people, whereas it is this person. Although that was thrown out, but I wanted to just share with you the sensitivity. Our IEC, as well as DCIS, had to come up with like code of ethics in terms of in governance. You don't have a vacuum. That officials do have a responsibility from one political term to the other. That is why you have to. I'm just raising that also that it might be taken for granted that it's a given, but there are these deep-rooted things that exactly relate to this matter. That yes. The same applies. Yes. But we learn through that process exactly that you don't have a vacuum. There are ethical things that people must. And then also on this issue that I mentioned some time back in terms of double dipping and the challenges that we face, that a person who's given a task, and I'm sure even the Labour Relations Act, under the relevant section of incapacity, that you work. Since there has to be an internal arrangement, but also on the question of people in their own capacity as rights, without it. So I would believe that. They should just look deeper too. I was just flagging that they can as well as check, phone IEC and DCIS and to say, in how would their interpretation be in terms of that?
The next clause is,
on this clause, Chair, our attention was also drawn to Section 21 of the Structures Act by one of the people that came to speak to us, and that is for which says that every citizen who is qualified to vote for a particular municipal council has the right to stand as a candidate in an election for that council. And here it is for parliament or for provincial legislature. So it seems to me we're going to have conflicting requirements. You can stand for the municipal council without any problems, but you can't stand for national assembly or any provincial legislature. You must resign. So I think there's some serious matters here that we have to concern whether we're not inconsistent.
Another domain?
Yes.
Okay. Is anybody Veronica geworden. Veronica is ook blij. Nee, hij kan best. Let's wait for the lawyer to tell us. They are conflicted. What you are doing, you are elaborating that. Why are you doing it?
No, I'm assisting them for what they must look to. Okay, you can, if I don't have the opportunity to speak now, and they come back, and they haven't entertained what I want to, I'm going to write it then. And there we go. The process is going to be dragged.
No, I take
so
your point.
I've got good intentions.
Yes. No, you see, this is what we said to the department yesterday and the state law advisors. There are legal arguments that were made here. Go and look at them and give us advice. So they would have picked it up. If they didn't, they would be out of order. But I agree with you that please take that on board. Come back to us, tell us why this inconsistency is acceptable. Are we not, why do we think at the provincial and local level things must have been different from the others and so on? That consistency is important.
Okay, and then just the last on this. I would consider something like unpaid leave as a compromise very seriously.
So
that can also be considered by them.
But it's in the submission, it's there. Sam will raise it. Gimatu raised the same thing you're saying. Now you're saying it yourself. It's there in the submission. I'm saying they should go and look at those and respond to us about them in the totality of their responses. I agree. I'm just pointing out to you, I'm trying to save us time. I'm trying to let us go through the clauses so that when they come back, if they haven't covered our ground as you are concerned about, then they will do so. Because those submissions were raised for a number of those. My worry is that we won't finish this if we don't do this. Yes, then.
I was suggesting that.
Are you?
Go ahead. No, I was suggesting that what you were suggesting is not that we need a further consultation on this issue, but the legal people were not here, now they are here.
Yeah,
issues, so we can dispense with this issue now, so it's not to come after.
That's fine, we'll do that. We'll do that at the appropriate time. Let's go through this clause, we'll come back to that. Let's go. The next clause is, which clause, what number is it?
Help me.
Sorry? 15.
Yeah,
15. We are taking for granted that you hear the submission, so you are able to refer. If we don't hear you responding to any of the submissions, we will raise it. Please do so. 15, cross 15. Any comments there?
Do we hear first from the department?
Yes. Let not ourselves say anything. Let's hear them respond to the critiques by the various people who made submissions on that one. Now this is dangerous. You're being very slow now. Am I out of order? Am I impatient?
Can you check this in? On clause 15, from the submissions that we received, there's a perception that the clause is aimed at promoting the single public service that is still under discussion. The aim of the clause is to allow for consultation amongst cabinet ministers. And we hold the view that cabinet ministers have a duty to consult on cross-cutting issues. Since the intention of the clause, it has got human resource-related matters. That is why you find the reference to the consultation with the Minister of DPSA. So the intention is not to inculcate the single public service that is still under discussion. The other concern is that the provision is undermining the bargaining council or the ability to bargain. We are of the view that Section 72 as it stands is subject to consultation with the bargaining council. So we are of the view that it is just a repetition of the old Section 72. Thank you, Chair.
Look, I don't want us to deny linkages to the single public service. You can't scientifically de-link it completely from those processes. The important argument is that you see there are issues that can be addressed outside of this process. The effect of this thing must be if it deals with human resources. The single public service is about human resources. It's about people and their mobility across the three spheres. Now, the concern is that I hear you addressing that even in the original act, there is a requirement for consultation with the bargaining council. It is not substituting them. So those who object have a basis, a place to be able to still have their views about this matter there. So it does not rule it out and so on. That's the important part for me. The second related issue is the consultation issue. You can't really stop anybody from consulting anybody. I don't think that one is a strong argument from anyone. Any other comment that members want to make about that one?
Yeah, no, Chairperson, just the question here. What will be a problem without this amendment? I'm trying to interrogate as to why, what is it that the department wanted to achieve by proposing this amendment? That is a problem, so that we are all clarified. And the reason I'm asking this, Chairperson, is that which act supersedes which, also legally, that we have a constitution that gives general protections to all employees, whether management, whether at whatever level, so that this subject to labor legislation, subject to the requirements of the Skills Development Act, does this imply that this section, the Municipal Assistance Act, in terms of this area, then it will be overridden by the labor legislation? And if that be the case, what is the aim of having this provision? I just want them to unearth the hidden objective of introducing this for the benefit of the community.
Yeah, Chairperson, number one, as you know, when the bill first was developed and we submitted to the channels to the department to consult, then the departments came back and said, well, we like, if you are going to, if the Minister of Provincial Local Government is going to regulate on these matters, then I need to be consulted as well. This was accepted because I have, my department has experience on a lot of these matters and so forth. Secondly, we wanted to more rationalize that system. Because as you know, in the original section, they make a separation there between issuing regulations and issuing guidelines. Now, we've collapsed the two into the first section, which says make regulations or issue guidelines on these number of issues, simply because in certain instances where, you know, one issues guidelines on a certain thing, it becomes contestable that we don't want to apply it at the local level because it's only guidelines. However, by collapsing the two and referring in the section to regulations or issue guidelines, it gives more discretion to the minister as to what areas that he would want to regulate on and what areas he would like to issue guidelines. So that's how we rationalize that. And of course, we just looked at the some of the, I think, the sections that dealt with originally in the issue of guidelines have just been restructured to incorporate new developments in regulating HR matters in local government.
Okay. Chairperson, just to give an answer of the subject to applicable labor legislation and subject to or the subject to the requirements of the Skills Development Act. When you make a provision that is subject to another applicable legislation, it means that when you exercise the power contained in that particular section, you will take into account the provisions of that particular legislation. For instance, in the sub 1, we are saying the minister may, subject to applicable labor law legislation, do the following. Then it means the framework within which the minister is going to operate is the labor legislation. And if we say subject to the requirements of the Skills Development Act, when the minister issue guidelines on the training and development of staff members of municipality, the minister will take into account the requirements as stipulated in the Skills Development Act. I'm not sure whether the state or advisor would be maybe willing to add something to.
That's how I understand it, Chairperson, as I've read the.
Just that one little one to not to keep you busy. You see, Jefferson, where there is consultation, there always is a dispute. And then where there is a dispute, there is jurisdiction. And there is I'm just raising this. I'm not compounding the issue. That consultation has got disputes because it never happens under normal circumstances. In most cases, that maybe also they need to, maybe in the future, look deeper into the possibility of a dispute, which then, even in the consultation, will then create a problem in terms of processes that's in place. And I'm saying within the framework of labor legislation, that then the problem becomes jurisdiction as to. It might relate, as you say, because I was of an opinion that this is just an extension of the conditions that exist within, say, a bargaining unit. That also should apply in terms of consistency outside that bargaining unit. Hence then these regulations from the minister. Because the others might be negotiated conditions, the others might not be. But for consistency.
Okay. So we leave with that. The reference to the Municipal Finance Act, which we are not there before, that's a new edition. And I guess let's leave that as so section 15 will go ahead, I guess. Clause 16.
Yes.
There were submissions on this matter. What do you say to meditate? The time is of unconditionality. That you haven't responded to.
No. Meritech didn't delve into this issue. This issue for relating to the new self-propagating sect. The only submission which I think touched on this, I think, is the case that I think it's Nelson Mandela maybe, who was saying that if municipalities make these copies, we might need to add something like at a prescribed payment fee, which we need to add here. And within, it is not necessary for us to put that, because if we do that, you get into a problem of, if you say you prescribe the thing, it means you come with other regulations. And what is this exact thing you are talking about?
Sure, I don't think there's a motivation for that fee, except to say that perhaps there are costs that are probably incurred by the municipality to recover all of this information, and they would like to be able to recover those. That are? Chair, I don't quite understand that. But what we're saying on this is that if a municipality wants to charge a fee to provide this information, we don't believe that such a fee should be prescribed in this legislation. If they would like to do that, that is subject to their own policies and bylaws or whatever that they have at the municipal level. Because every municipality in the country may have varying costs anyway, and we wouldn't want to regulate those through the legislation or any regulations pending from the legislation.
My problem is that if they make a submission and you say that's not motivated, I don't understand that.
It's not motivated. They just came with the thing. It doesn't
say. They just say that.
I'm looking at it now as we are speaking.
Just read that quickly.
No, what they are saying is this. It is suggested that the following words be added to the new subsection, in quotes, blah, 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 and against payment of any prescribed fee. That is all what they are saying. They are not motivated.
Okay. You have a right to throw it out if they think they must. Okay. Yes, sir.
Look, sir, I tend to agree with that department. Because it just says they must provide if the owner requests such accounts in writing to the municipality. Now, if I'm going to write to the municipality and say, supply me with the information with regard to the charges that you made to the person who was occupying my property, and they write back to me and say, look, it'll cost me, you know, 25,000 rand, you know, it becomes a futile, useless, uneconomical process. So, I think this clause is fair, and what the inequality is concerned is...
My own
it's going to be a problem, sir, if the inequality sues me, because the contract is not paid, and then I request, which have got a right, a constitutional right to that information. The lawyers would agree with me. And the response to say, pay for it. You know, it's going to be a problem. A very serious problem.
Okay. Yes, Jomi. Yeah, Chair, I support it as it stands here. I feel that the municipalities can't have their bread eat their cake and have their bread butters on both sides, because they hold the owners accountable for such accounts, but they don't want to give them the accounts and they want their costs recovered for that. But I want to ask one thing. Does this imply that you can ask for a whole year's accounts? You put in somebody to rent your property. Can you request, according to this, that for the whole year you must send me each month an account also? Or is this only
Is it open? Is it open-ended, this?
What law does this seek to comply with? Is this the... Let me give you another question. Yes, ma'am.
Sorry, Chair, this was inserted, if you recall in the presentation, we mentioned that there was a constitutional court judgment.
Yes.
On this matter.
Yes.
Allowing for the owner of a property insight into amount owed on his property, either a property, but occupied by someone else.
Yes.
The judgment also says that the owner can be liable for the non-payment of such amount.
Yes.
And because sometimes, even when the owner wants to sell his property, and the municipality goes in and says, well, this is outstanding. But
yes,
the person was renting there, left, is gone, hasn't paid.
Yeah.
And it created problems.
Yeah.
So the judgment said, well, the owner of property must have access. If he requests access, he must provide the thing.
Okay.
It does not say anything about
now that. Now I have the answer in my head. It does answer the question of... the municipality would otherwise be guilty of stuff about administrative justice. If you can't tell me how much I owe you when I need it, on what basis would you take me to the cleaners? Doesn't seem unreasonable. Okay. The point I was making about the unmotivated submission, there might be a gem in there that we could be dealing with. But now, if it's not motivated, if it's not explained, it seems difficult for me to make judgment. It's a pity to throw out stuff like that. They must have thought about it. You know, just like a Kangala comes all the way to tell us about the clause and they don't tell us how to formulate it. I mean, like, it's really, man, over 1,000 kilometers and so on. It's unfortunate that we have that submission. Okay. We leave with that one. This is okay. Yes.
If the answer that it is open-ended, that they can request for the whole year as it stands here.
It doesn't refer to time
frame.
Such property, the owner requests such accounts in writing from the municipality. There's no reference to how often and so on. You were going into the detail, how often and for how long can you want. But that's a detail, so it wouldn't be in here.
Oh, I want to ask for where is that to make
sure. No. I'm just asking, why do you want detail? Okay. Yeah.
No, I'll specify.
Okay. Yeah, all right.
Sorry, Chair.
Yes, Chair.
Sorry, Chair, this is one thing. You know, we passed clause 16. Clause 15 already, the one about the regulation.
Yeah.
But of course, if you remember clearly, causes are motivated for an additional clause to be inserted, requesting that the minister be able to make regulations on disciplinary court. So I'm wondering whether you're going to come back to that.
And do you think that's the section that would be appropriate?
Yeah, that would be the section that they proposed to be amended.
Okay. Okay, any comment on that, member?
It's section...
No, section 16. You remember the KZN proposal that many municipalities don't have a code for section 57 employees, and therefore it may well be good to have a holding provision until they develop their own stuff. Can we accept that, members?
Yes.
Okay, all right. Okay, so you'll give it the appropriate numbering and stuff like that, right?
Yes.
Under 15. Okay, let's go back to 18.
There's one point of order here.
Yes.
The process that we are busy with now is to build a consensus and get clarity and so on. When we get to the final process in this committee, we, of course, want everything in writing.
You mean the wedding and stuff?
Yeah. The formal process, as we call it.
Yes.
Yeah, because, I mean, you said that we want to conclude today. We know the whole committee must leave this afternoon. We must leave early. I just want that there shouldn't be misunderstanding. We can only vote
see if we have things in writing. Let's go. Section 18. The KZN for some reason, but I don't know what members think. It's just a gut feeling. This is section 106. Remember, KZN said we must exclude in the absence of provincial legislation. But I have no firm views about it. Is there anybody else who made a submission on this floor? And they were talking about the possibility of teeth, but they didn't provide us with any man-made dentures for MECs. Yeah, it was the relevant part of it there. Are there any teeth there for what they were saying? Yeah, that's the point they're making.
But I mean, their submission is in the light of a Supreme Court appeal. I mean, we need some legal advice here whether we shouldn't delete these words to make it more effective. We really need some guidance here.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Let's move on. Let's leave that one out. 106. Any other comment on 106? Right. Let's go to clause 19.
Thank you, Chairperson. On clause 20, there was a concern that the minister cannot exempt said municipalities or municipal entities from the provisions of Chapter 8 and 8A of the Act. Chairperson, the concern that is being raised, we don't clearly understand the its constitutional basis, because all the sections that they are quoting are actually in support of the amendment. For instance, they are quoting Section 154 of the Constitution. Which says that national and provincial governments, by legislative and other measures, must support and strengthen the capacity of municipalities to manage their own affairs and sacrifice their powers and functions. I think it's actually the intention of the provisions, because the purpose is for the minister to exempt municipalities that cannot comply with the provisions of Section 78, and because there are municipalities who cannot. Because of cost implications, cannot conduct the feasibility studies and all the requirements of Section 78. And there is a possibility that those municipalities can be taken to court if they don't comply with the provision. Maybe my colleagues may want to.
The question they are raising is that if they can't comply now, so what makes them think that they will therefore not be taken to court for other violations that may not necessarily relate to those provisions that they want being to be exempted from? Does it necessarily offer them that? Any other comment on that, Law? Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, I think part of the motivation for having this section 20 is because some municipalities have been raising issues. For example, if you look at some of the things, including electricity restructuring, that to an extent, that there is a sort of a policy or a consensus as to what ought to happen, then why should they have to go through some of the processes if they know what they want to do? So, because those costs may be very high, so that is some of the things which have been coming from municipalities and to some extent SALCA. And so with that regard, the Department of Minerals and Energy requested us to look into this issue, and in some ways even the Municipal Finance Management Act already has got something which is similar to this, when it was, which allows for those processes to happen as well.
Mm. Well, the you see, the essential attack on the request for is that you are suspending consultation. That's effectively what you're saying, public participation. This is the argument that has been raised. And the question is, why is that proper?
Chairperson, I'm not quite sure whether it's suspending consultation.
What are the provisions of 8 and 8A? What is the requirement? That you go through consultation? Isn't that what it says?
Yeah.
Yeah, so? How can you say you're not ready? Your colleague says there's consensus, so why go through all that rigmarole?
This relates very closely to the restructuring exercise, the EDI.
Yes.
And the provision that was made originally that if you have to find an external mechanism to supply services or to render the provision of the function, you have to do A, B, C, D. Now, the argument that has been put forward is that in the case of electricity, the external mechanism has already been determined. And if the external mechanism has already been determined, that is via a cabinet decision to establish a REDS, when the arrangements take place between the municipality to go over to the REDS, you don't want a situation that it is held back because of the current position of a provision which says there must be a feasibility study and so forth and so forth and so forth. Because a feasibility study will say whether to go for the rates or not. But at the same time, the government has already decided on the rates. So the cost of the feasibility study or not doing the feasibility study can be a legal problem when the establishment of the rates takes place. And that is why we put the provision for the minister to provide for the exemption.
Well,
that was what was motivated.
Okay.
It's not unlike the some of the comments that were made, the minister is suspending the powers of functions, or exempting people from doing on the normal course of municipal life, exempt chaps from implementing their powers and functions. This one is structured specifically to look at the red situation, and therefore it will only be invoked by the minister using his discretion for that particular purpose.
Let me hear other people's views.
Yeah, Chairperson, despite what the doctors are saying, I just want to take you back to when the Municipal Systems Act, when there is a bill, I'm saying this for other members to comment, I think this was a very emotional area in terms of the spirit of Chapter 8. Well, at the time, the challenge we had was that, and I speak under correction, there was this thing of municipalities that were doing as they pleased, and they were outsourcing certain things without, I'm just saying on the question of capacity assessment and the procedures that they put in place. Despite the rest issue that, in the spirit of the whole chapter, we are very sensitive to what is happening, the reality, what is happening. That is why, in brief, there was a principle that said it has at all times be the responsibility of self-delivery, and responsibility should rest with the municipality. But on the other hand, also on the question of capacity that it has, the other one is whether you start internally, then you move externally before you can take any decision in terms of whether it is an entity that you have to take over. I'm just giving you that sensitizing you around the challenges that we have faced. You would know that even during the time through the chairperson, when we dealt with this, there were municipalities that were even reprimanded by the president, who during that time, it was around September, who outsourced certain facilities whilst we were busy with this.
Chief, I'm worried about this loss. Because the assumptions that have been made that things are going to be held back are presumptions in the first place. I don't understand it. Let's hear you this, Domin.
I also have serious concerns about this. I mean, the principle also, we made a law at Parliament and we put Chapter 8 into law. And now we say, despite that, the minister can exempt municipalities to apply to that law that we made in Parliament. So it's a very serious matter for me to give the minister that right. And I also want to ask why then, if it is a specific problem, if it's electricity, why don't we formulate it that now it's municipal service in total that the minister can exempt municipalities to apply to this chapter in law. So I must say I have a serious problem with this.
Any comment? Yes, yes.
Yeah, I think I would like to draw your attention to the fact that here it is not only one minister, it's three ministers. It's the minister who is responsible for the sector content, the minister responsible for provincial and local government, and the minister of finance, is three ministers. And the reason cabinet moved in that direction, it felt that this is a serious issue, not to be left to one minister only. So all those ministers, they will have to take into account the broader necessary issues. It's not only electricity, it's also about the water sector as well, which is also undergoing. So if we close this to electricity, the same thing might happen. But those are the things which those ministers will have to, it will have to be motivated and looked at it in terms of that before it is applied. And so that is the reason the thing is here. So it's not giving unfettered powers to one minister only, but also some of the things they will have, because they will also have to apply their mind. For example, some of the things will have to be clear as to what is the basis. And if you look at it, there is a proviso as well. Despite that you allow for that to happen, you are not forcing that municipal council to go with that option. It's only that what you suspend is all these disability things which some municipalities and SARGA, because most people in the sector have been using the fact that they have to go through this process, which is sometimes they take as a detailed exercise, and most are on the code implications part of it. Some of them have been regarding it as it might be tantamount to wasteful expenditure. If you will have to incur something like 1 million, which you as a municipality may decide, like, for example, if you look at electricity, if you can't do it, you as your municipality, the only thing you can do is throw the head and nothing else. So why do you want to go around looking as to whether the thing is feasible or not? Because it's for you as a council of the municipality to choose whether you go in or not. And if you go in, because that thing, it has got national dimensions which have been taken into account, you don't need to do any feasibility study.
Any comments? Yes, sir.
Chair, looking at that, sure if I clear my mind, just an enabling
clause
that makes sure that services are easily rolled out to the finance beneficiaries. I mean, in terms of an explanation process, it's not only limited to the restructuring of
the company.
Okay, that's plus 20. Let's hold on to that. Let's go to the next plus 21. The submissions that were made relevant to this one. Any comments about those submissions?
I'm trying to look at this very carefully. It says no counselor may be party to it or beneficiary, but it says nothing about official chairperson or whether or I would like to get a relevant reason. I understand some of the political reasons that may be raised, but why is it limited to councillors and not to officials as well?
Yeah.
The officials are dealt with in a subsequent section.
23. Oh.
Yeah.
Eat them alive one at a time.
So this refers to any municipality in the country, whether, so if you are, if you're a councillor in Cape Town, you cannot benefit from anything in Swanee.
Yes, that's what it's actually saying, and it's in the purpose of this thing is to bring it in alignment with the Municipal Finance Management Act, and there's a section in the Municipal Finance sub-item 4 to item 6 of the Schedule 1, and sub-item 3 to item 4, Schedule 2. So it's to bring it into alignment with the municipal system.
Okay. You see, you're saying whether it's only councillors and officials. What about MPs and MPs? Yes.
The Municipal Finance Management Act procurement regulations actually, in a blanket way, say that no person who is in the service of the state may participate in the procurement processes of local government. So it covers all of those people in the service of councillors, MPs, us as officials. Of course, it gives kind of a cooling off period of about 2 years. It's not completely, you're not completely out. You would have to have, once you've left the service of the state, 2 years later, you may do that. Now, the schedule in the Systems Act was obviously contradictory to that because it was allowing for the Municipal Council to waive that and give you permission to participate in procurement processes. So here we're trying to align it to that provision that there's no person in the service of the state to cover the councillors and the officials of the municipality.
Okay. What you just said about the regulations, you can give them to Luele. Work with Luele, give him those sections that are saying what you just said earlier.
Okay. I'll do that,
yeah. Okay. Go ahead.
I think Chair will be very happy. I remember at some point the Minister of Finance promised us to explain extensively, but there were other things that were there that really were quite not happy with them. We'll be very happy. Thank you very much, Chair, for that.
Yes, yes.
Now, just a point that I wanted to make a comment on that. I'm not sure how critical this issue is now, and from where I sit as the ANC, this is one area during which that is undergoing a policy process. I'm just raising that question, where it is being thoroughly interrogated and with some concerns and objections. The cooling off issue, I'm sure you are aware of that policy. The proposal that still has to, notwithstanding what we are raising, just
okay.
In the meantime, yeah, okay.
Yes, then this one, I tend to support it, but in principle, I just have a problem with that provision in the occupation of this state or the service of the state. You see, a member of parliament or a councillor, when you become a minister, you become a state official and you are paid. You're a cabinet, you work for the state, but as a member of parliament or a councillor, you're an independent elected person to that body. And is it covered by that, so that we have to bring it in line? You know, I've just got a problem with the principle that we are seen as in the occupation of the state.
All that he's asking you to do is to put you into the loop appropriately.
Yes,
sir. But I think Chairperson, here what we are doing, we are not dealing with the broader issues. It's only issues which affect us. So I don't think we do have that intention to get ourselves into the broader debate which are taking place. And even if you look, whatever the MFMA is saying, is only in relation to local government, because National Treasury has been regularizing us. There was a question as to how serious. And there have been, actually there's been a while we've been sitting with the thing at CPLC because we couldn't bring this. Because they were saying on the ground it creates problems because of this lack of alignment. So people are interpreting the things differently. And they were raising the thing as a critical issue to us. And that is the reason we agreed that the thing we need to do that alignment to the areas of opportunity.
That's true. Some people are going to have to apply immediately this thing becomes law. To be removed from and some serious implications there, but also you're going to have fireworks about it. Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, Chair, just to add, the converse is also true, that if we don't do the alignment, then the people involved in these kinds of contracts will use one legislation against the other.
Yeah.
And it creates serious problems, because a lot of those problems, we have to deal with it in the department, you know, in forms of complaints and letters and so forth.
Yeah, okay.
Now, this also, you've got part-time counselors. You've got part-time counselors that do other work. They are part-time. It's acknowledged by the law. So they can do business whatever whom they like to, except with any municipality. That's what it boils down to.
Yeah.
Yes. And you say we're not taking a right away from them.
Yes. Okay. Okay, cross 23? No, cross just the same, just a minute. 24? Well, one of the submissions wants to know whether this is adequate. It's mere declaration. Is it?
Yeah, Chair, there were one such a suggestion was that we include declaration of gifts over a certain value. We discussed members want to respond to the problem of including that.
Was that the only submission on this one? What other submissions were there on this one? Okay. I think this is going along with the other two, as it just means the general requirement here. Let's go to cross 25.
On cross 25, there was not a...
Okay. So shall we leave that, okay? 26?
Well, the only submission which we received here is the from KZN, which was saying for us, there was a suggestion that we received number 26A, in school, so that number he identified for the three to the word identify, which is implement. And we deliver it at point, and we feel that we are compatible with identify, because part of the reasons we are saying some of the things, we got into a lot of interpretation as to what and things mean, and here, as we have whether it, we think it's simple, it won't get us into any legal interpretation. So if we put the word determine, it might be interpreted in any way. But when we say identify, it's straightforward. It won't get municipalities to get into the confusion which we are trying to solve here.
Okay. 27?
On 27, there was no submission received regarding this.
Okay. 28?
Also no submission received.
29?
Also there is no submission here. Clause 21, the only submission we received here, colleagues may remind me, is only in relation to Mary Texman, Peter Mier, who touched on this particular issue. And there are certain observations we have made. His understanding of what is the purpose of this particular section of the Act, regardless of how we are amending it, it does not understand it. And the purpose of this, when it was put in the Act in the first instance, it was to say that because councillors get elected by those who are eligible to elect them, and the majority of those people in the municipality are residential property owners, so municipalities are like to adopt the rate policies which are preferential in terms of rating, so they are likely to favor those people. So the issue which was the other sector, it might be commerce, it might be industry, it might be agriculture. How are they protected? And the policy decision was that what we will need to look at is to make racial alignment. You use the residential property category as a base or a plane of reference. You say to this extent, if you raise the property category at this particular level, to what extent should you go up or below regarding the other sectors, for example, agriculture, and those things are already happening in relation to KZN and Umgeni, in particular, is what KZN was also raising as well. It's to say that you can say that you cannot raise the residential property category twice what you could do with respect to the residential property category. So that is the purpose of the Act, and it did not get it when you look at what you are saying, because all what it's trying to do is to take us back to where the Act in itself it was trying to rectify the thing, to say within the residential property category, allow a differentiation. So if you take the city of Cape Town, have a system where the people in Camp Bay, they may be rated differently from people in Kailicha and all those things which is against what the uniformity spirit of the Act is all about. So that is our submission. So what he's saying, we do not think there is any merit in that.
Next.
Section 20.
How did
you come to 20 now? Sorry. I'm looking at 32 and looking at 20 on the other side. So I'm trying to read through this.
I was suspecting that you're doing something other than you.
Well, I don't drink the other things. No, yeah, but here the only comment we got is in relation to KZN. And what KZN was saying is that it was suggesting that the word may, it ought to be changed to the word must. So that is what they were suggesting, but in principle, they agree with what we are recommending, and some of the things is also highlighted to the practical experiences we are seeing in particular KZN. But having looked at it, we do not think for a number of reasons we need to change that way to must, because there may be circumstances even in the future where it might not be necessary for some of these interventions we want to do
to be there. So if you have the white mask, it becomes a problem. But also practically speaking now, we are in October. If this act just passed by both the National Assembly as well and the Assembly, at a particular date, it will also need to be signed into law by the President. And if you look at it in terms of the Municipal Finance Management Act, it will have to implement the things which are intimated here. The MFMA says that by the 15th of March of that particular financial year, you also have finalized those regulations, not consultation process. And here, once the act is signed into law, then we'll have to deal with the issue of public consultation after drafting the things, have it there for public comment, after public comment, engage with the various stakeholders before you gather it for implementation. So if we were to put the white mark again coming to 1st July 2008, practically it might not be possible. But despite that, we are saying that also some of these things, and if you look at it in terms of the radical things which even us and the National Treasurer agree, but as to how we need to deal with those things, we will need to apply our mind very seriously. And at the same time, KZN is not even suggesting that you put mask, but this is how you need to do it, so that it's something you can do quickly. So those are the reasons we are having of not acceding to their request to change the word "may" into mask.
33
is what the city of Cape Town yesterday, the last person to make a submission, that discussion was all about. Like I said, when I tried to clear, because he said he didn't understand where it was coming from, this was coming from municipalities, and the explanation I gave yesterday still holds on this particular one, but the only submission we got is only from the city of Cape Town. When KZN also brought something about something which is about double negative in a particular clause, but they didn't suggest how we ought to draft that, and we looked at it yesterday together with our legal people, and we think that we should not change what they are saying. And also from our own point of view as a department, having engaged with most of these valuers, we are not aware of valuers having complained about that being a problem. The other things which we are cleaning in this act comes from the problems which are coming from the ground, including valuers. But what you are saying as a motivation, we are not aware of it. And also, we interact with KZN, and it was for the first time we're hearing that particular issue coming from.
There's a number in there. Is that 54 correct? From 48. Don't introduce Dorman's story. Correct with another program.
Well, we can recheck it to be double sure, but there is no submission which we got here.
Correct.
And also 36, we didn't get any submission. 37, we didn't get any submission. 38, we didn't get any submission. The other thing which I might need to say on valuation-related issues is, again, the thing which we got from metrics from Mr. Peter Nieger. But yesterday he did not speak more about it, which is in the submission. But that in a nutshell, it's something which we are not convinced, because it is not in line with both the letter and the intent of the legislation. It's coming with a new something which does not amount to proper training.
I just wanted to before we move away from the Structures Act, that now here as we are now the Property Rights Act, that do we agree, Jefferson, that we are going to prioritize outside this process?
No. Hold on. I know what you're going to say. Don't say it now. Let's finish the bill first, and then we'll come back. This is the property references here are part of the rest of the bill. Okay?
get an opportunity to say what next, having discussed the issues that are outstanding that require further talking to a source, and put that on that agenda. But for now, let's agree on how we're going to proceed. What are our next steps? Now, there are specific requests for formulations that we made, so can we have those? Can we have a 5 minute comfort break? 5 minutes strictly comfort break.
Then are you going to also communicate like to the members of the opposition who apologize? Yeah.
Communicate with all of us that the next meeting was today at this time. So.
But also the necessary amendments be circulated prior, like is indicated. For
yeah.
I'm not speaking for Domin, but I'm saying.
Yeah.
He said also he doesn't feel comfortable in the absence of whatever cleanup work that.
No, this is what yeah. was meant to do. Once we have this, then we could work. So all that the wording does is essentially this. And if there are changes that people want to propose, Tuesday is another opportunity to do that. If there's any substantial reformulation of any one of these things, then that can be done there. Yeah. Thank you very much. Let's meet next Tuesday. Huh? 3 o'clock. 3 o'clock. Yeah.